annual, or this annual Professional Development Week, and our panel today is discussing the academic promotion process. And we have here Susan Markovits from Library Human Resources, Scott Biggs from Library Technical Services, Bob Kibbe from IRIS, Tony Cosgrave from IRIS, Deborah Lamb-Medin from Catapult Library, and Erla Heinz from Veterinary Library.
Erla is going to be the start.
I'm the moderator of the presentation today. I am the chair of the APPC committee, and so it's my, I'm the co-chair,
academic
personnel policy committee. And we are the committee who actually appoint a review committee for promotion. So what we're going to do today is everybody will make an informal presentation, and then we'll have entertain questions at the end. Susan will talk about the process in general, and then Scott will talk from the perspective of a supervisor and give you some information. Bob will speak about his experiences being chair of the librarian promotion process, so we'll be able to talk about that. And then Tony and Deb were co-chairs of the promotion process a couple of years ago for promotion to associate librarian. So they will give a presentation on that. Specifically, talk about process and content. And I'll take notes.
And we really do want this to be informal. So if you have questions as we go along, please ask them. You know, I don't think anybody would mind that, right? I think what we've normally done in the past is have you all start, if you don't mind, okay. Go this way.
So, Tony, you're on.
Okay, great. Well, thanks. But I wasn't prepared. So I get to talk a little bit about the process and logistics around, I'm going to talk about the makeup of the board, talk about the time frame under which the board operates, a little bit about the board's activities in sort of an outline form, and then Deb's going to talk a little bit more about what the board is looking for in the individual candidates. So, in the instance of associate librarian, the board is made up of 5 members and 2 alternates. Each person on the board is a member, holds the rank for which they're reviewing or above that rank. So for associate, everyone would either be an associate librarian or a full librarian. The members are actually nominated to the Academic Personnel Policy Committee, if I understand. They actually make the final decision, or they nominate the people from the APPC. Thank you. They nominate people for the board to Sarah, who makes the selections. They serve for 2 years, and the membership is staggering in order that you have some continuing members on each of the boards. And the chairs are selected at the committee's first meeting. And normally it's one of the people who is a continuing member who had gone through the process the year before. The alternates are available in case a regular member has to recuse him or herself, and also in case there's some other reason they can't serve out their term. Now, the time frame under which they operate, in our case, the new members usually are invited to join the board in mid-August. The first meeting is held in late August, and then the board's report is due in mid-November, normally. Susan and Sarah attend the part of the first board meeting, and at that meeting, Sarah normally briefs the members on, you know, what she feels is important for them to be looking at when they're reviewing the candidates' packets. Susan, you know, talks a little bit about the process and the procedures that we would operate under. The committee then identifies a chair, or in our case, chairs, co-chairs, and decide which members are going to have primary responsibility for which candidates, and then they also decide on a regular meeting schedule. In my experience, what happens is, depending on the number of candidates that are being reviewed, each member would be responsible for one candidate as the primary person. So everybody in the committee reads everybody's material, but one person is responsible for, you know, looking at that person more carefully, and then we'll ultimately write the letter of recommendation. You know, the entire committee will review it and provide feedback on that. The board holds regular meetings throughout the period. All the board members, including the alternates, at least in our case, reviewed all the candidates' material, as I said. The first thing that the board wants to do is look at all of the various submissions, I guess you will, and make sure that they're complete. There's normally a checklist of all the things that you have to have, and one of the first things you want to do is address any omissions, because if it's a letter of reference, it's going to take some time to get, And in one instance, when I was reviewing the candidate, one of the annual performance reviews was missing, and we had to just, you know, acquire that. We had great support out of 213. You know, we didn't have to do this work ourselves. We just identify to whomever. Pardon me? 201, thank you. Which hat am I wearing today? And, you know, basically just said, you know, we're missing this, and they were able to track it down for us and get it into the file. In one other, of course, we served for 2 years, another instance where the number of candidates were such that two people worked together on a particular person's packet. Of course, they're looking for the packet completeness in relationship to Procedure 13 and the requirements there. And even if the packet is quote-unquote complete, according to Procedure 13, the committee has the right to request additional material because there may be certain things that they feel are lacking, some important area where they may have mentioned it in their vita, but they don't have any references in that area or something like that. So they can still request additional things, and it's fairly common. So, you know, if you submitted your stuff and suddenly, you know, you get some, they want you to identify someone who can make a reference in this area, it's not necessarily a negative thing. It's a very common thing for the committee to want to get a little better picture of something in particular. One thing to mention in terms of the logistics is that all the material is kept confidential. It's all in Olin 201 at all times. The committee members set aside time to go and review the material in 201 again. All the committee meetings are held in 201 so that the material is on hand to consult. Typically, after a couple of preliminary meetings are held to review all the packets for completeness, then the committees will hold individual meetings about the individual candidates, and they'll start looking at their packets in detail.
We also don't do anything by email.
Exactly, yeah. Nothing is distributed via email. Everything is delivered in, you know, in person or in paper for confidentiality, so nothing can be tracked electronically. At the end of the process, all the copies and drafts are destroyed, and then the letters are finally submitted to the committee chairs, who then in turn would submit the whole packet to Sarah Thomas in completion. Does anybody have any questions about any of the logistics of the process before Deborah talks a little bit about what they're looking for? Yeah, Eric.
At any point, do any of the members, especially those that responsible for a candidate, do they ever actually have direct contact with that individual, or you go through 201 and then people 201 is contacting?
You know, in my experience, we didn't have any direct contact with any of the candidates. It was all through 201 when we needed stuff, and I think in most cases it's a matter of contacting their supervisor to get some pieces that were missing and things like that, but it would be all handled through 201 normally.
Also, when you say pieces missing, I think you used the word references, and I'm wondering, say, I mean, as an example, ages ago when I served on a task force of which I was the chair, and so if I mentioned that in my view, it didn't, you know, is that the type of thing you're talking about, is that, or are there other instances, I mean, is that the sort of thing you're talking about? I'm just kind of trying to get it.
Yeah, it is really, I mean, of course, there are some specific things, just sort of a checklist, and you want to make sure that there are specific things that are in the packet that are required. But then again, under the board, depending upon the individual candidate, could still request additional references for certain areas. And so the example you gave, you know, could be one where the committee would be interested in getting someone's reference on that.
I had an experience when I was serving as an alternate. I did attend as an alternate on the committee, and we had several different request that went out for additional information. It was, you know, somebody had written a paper, was a person outside of Cornell, and wanted to get more information from that person about the process and how these two people worked together, and because there wasn't a lot of information beside the article. So that was one example of getting additional information. So it's often associated with additional references or an explanation of a process that somebody might have been involved in, and their specific role in that process.
Another thing, if when the review board really has their discretion to ask for additional information, they could ask the supervisor to come and talk to the panel, talk to the review board. We've done that in not recent memory, but in previous years where there was the material submitted by the candidate and the reference submitted by the supervisor didn't quite go together. There were some questions about who was really responsible for the work or how it was done or whether it was done properly. I don't really remember. So the review board felt it would be more helpful to them to have the supervisor actually come and talk to the review board so they could ask questions. If someone is asked to come and meet with the review board, notes are taken of that meeting, and then the person who comes to the meeting is asked to sign, say, yes, this is what I said, and it becomes part of the official record. And I did want to say what when Tony said that everything is destroyed after the review board, I think you meant the notes that individuals
yes,
use.
Yes, right, the committee's notes and drafts of letters and things like
individual
that.
Individual panel members, or review board members, you know, maybe take notes as they review people's materials, or there may be drafts of letters of recommendation. The drafts go away, but all of the materials that were submitted, the letters, the reference letters, all of that is preserved. I just don't want you to be under the assumption that
big
everything is thrown away and what's left is one letter. Does that answer the question? So an individual could be asked to come themselves and appear before the board. That I don't think that's happened. I don't think so. I mean, in 10 years, that hasn't happened. It's possible it happened before that, before I was involved with this process. But so it's pretty flexible. Does that answer your question, Eric, too, about what?
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
Because I wondered about that. You know, what say do I would have in this process in the sense that, you know, stronger documents or something like that, and what additional thing?
It is a hands-off, I mean, it's a paper process. It's not an interview process. It's not one where the candidate is generally asked to come and meet with the review board. So that's why the record, the materials, the packet you submit is very important. Because it's the written materials that, plus the letters of reference from the your references and your supervisors and people in the hierarchy.
It sounds like everyone is on a review committee. They're librarians within this university, so they're more or less familiar with what.
Well, everyone that's on the review board is at the associate or librarian rank at Cornell. The letters that come in from outside, those people aren't necessarily as familiar with our process, but yes.
Which actually opens it up, a nice segue to me, all about me. I'm going to talk about what we look for in the package. I mean, if you look through the procedure, it tells you pretty much what to submit. And I'm going to tell you what it's like from our point of view. And the first thing I want to say is the criteria has really been set up to be flexible. And although Tony says there's a checklist, there really isn't a secret checklist of things that we're looking for within the packet. And we look at each portfolio individually. We don't compare it to the others that we've gotten. Each one is considered a separate case. And I have here less is more. And if you consider the time frame that we're under, we usually don't get the portfolios till about sometime in September. And people are very good about the process and about the time frame. About and in the old days, like I didn't get my notification until Christmas Eve. Luckily, it was a good one. But we've been very mindful, I think, and we try to get it out. I believe the first week of December, or the beginning of December, if we can. So because of that, we have only a couple of months. We work backwards. We said, all right, we want to get our letters written and handed in by the third week of November before Thanksgiving, and so then you count back. So less is more. Remember that. Let that be a mantra. What do we look for? We look for the potential of future growth. We don't expect you, and we're looking at from senior assistant to associate, we don't expect you've done everything in the world. In fact, we'd be kind of suspicious if you had. So we look, though, for the potential of future growth and that you've given some thought to your career path. And it's not, you just haven't joined every committee because you think it's activities the board wants to see. So give it some thought. I mean, that's what we're looking for. And honestly, when Tony and I talked about this last year, we both agreed we'd rather see fewer committees with more meaningful contributions, like being a chair or a co-chair or writing a report, then we would, you've joined every committee that's out there. If I see you've been on every committee that's out there, it's like, I don't think you can do all that, can you? So think about it. Again, make it relevant to where it is you want to go. And I think the expectation is that you've contributed to your unit or your library and your functional group, if you're in one. Hopefully we're all functional. We look for activities within the library system. We look for activities outside of the library system, some activity, depending on, again, I can't give you that checklist because it depends on what is you're doing. So it can be activities, professional activities on a local nature or on a regional nature or on a national nature. You know, the ENIACRL or NYLA or the SAA or ALA, SLA, those type of things. We look for those type of instances that you are working to help your profession and to bring the Cornell name out there to show, you know, it's a learning experience for you and you can bring it back to us as well. And we look for a progression. We don't, you know, if you're show us that sometimes the local groups prepare you for the national groups. You get your name out there, you get to know people, you get to know where you're going, and you get to know what they're looking for as well. And again, we understand that each route is different. There is no, I would, willing to say, if you looked at everybody at this table, we all got to where we were at a completely different route. So there is, which makes it kind of harder for us looking at the packages because there isn't the secret check. So your letter is really extremely important because that gives you the opportunity to highlight some of the things that, what are you proudest of? What do you want to tell us that has contributed to your growth as an academic professional? Don't repeat your resume. We can read, honestly, I think we all can. So we've all read your resume. So this is the opportunity. Take one or two things and just say, wow, this is, you know, I want you to look at this because this has really made me much better because, and explain why. Just don't say, oh, I'd like to draw your attention to so-and-so. Explain why you want us to look at what you're highlighting. And if you're taking a somewhat less obvious path, if you've changed jobs or directions or was rented out to another department for a big, huge project, or if you've come from some other place, not just CUL, because I think there are librarians in other places, explain that a little more to us, because while we may know more about the library, our library process, we may not understand what other libraries have done and what your opportunities were. So let us know, how did that experience prepare you for the great person you are now? I mean, we're really pulling for you, you know, we want you to succeed, so we're not out there nitpicking, we really want you to wow us. Have your organization, don't make me hunt for things. When you prepare that notebook, there is a logical way that it should be. There should be a table of contents. I really liked if you had little dividers with little tabs on it so I could go. And if you refer to something in your letter, if you say, you know, I did this great publication and you'll find an excerpt for it in tab D or appendix D, make sure I can find appendix D or tab D. And again, we're looking through lots and big sometimes stuff, and there's a lot of us. Make it easier for us. Again, we really are pulling for you. I would say if you can, look at somebody else's. Your supervisor is going to be a great help here, and they'll talk about this. But also, you know, we all know people have been through the process recently. Look at theirs if they'll let you. Show me yours and I'll show you mine. And get a sense, you know, talk to them. What was it like to go through this and how did they put together their notebook or their package? I see people in this room who I think did a really stellar job. So take advantage of the resource that are your colleagues. References, we brought that up. I don't know. I know it says three. It says at least three. At least three means 10, okay? No, I'm just kidding. I mean, but more than three would be helpful,
yeah.
Which is why we end up asking for more if you only give us three.
I would say 8, 7, 8, 9, 10, something like that is the norm.
Yeah.
And a wide variety of people. And you asked, you...
I think you're about to answer this, so go on.
Okay, so people that you work with, people in your department, Okay, your supervisor has already written your job evaluation, so that's in it. So,
well, no, the supervisors are asked directly about the promotion. It's
okay,
not just the
that's
performance
right. So reviews. there is that separate letter. Okay. So you're going to ask the people you work with. You're going to ask if your committee, you know, if you're on a committee with somebody, or you co-chaired a committee with somebody, or you worked really hard on a committee with somebody within the library system, you're going to ask them. You should ask if you are fortunate enough to work, say, with faculty, or to work with another department like CIT. I know Tony does a lot of things with CIT. It would be appropriate, if he ever goes up again, ever, to ask for somebody like a CIT if he's working on with a Blackboard project or something like that. Faculty members, again, they're very good about it. Ask if you're on a committee for ENIACRL or for ALA or for SLA or for SAA. Ask the people on that committee to give you a recommendation. If you've published anything in, like, any kind of journals, certainly you're going to want to include that. But if you were a co-author of something, ask, you know, that's another appropriate one. I know for me, because I didn't do all my experience here, former bosses and people I worked with at other places, other institutions were asked. And that also helped. Most of us are modest, I put in. We're librarians because we are very modest. And so your references are those people who are going to help get over that modesty, because they're going to be the ones who are going to help give you, you know, say the great things about you that maybe you're not quite ready to say about yourself. So here's my last sentence. Be creative. Be intelligent. Be honest. Be sincere. Be informative, be pithy, and above all, be brief. People can.
That was a long sentence to say, be brief.
Good point. I don't have to be brief, I'm already done.
You could talk a little bit.
Yeah,
so I'll answer.
I think maybe we'll change the format just a little bit, and I'd like to just tell you a little bit more about the process from the logistics point of view, because before Bob gives his report on the promotion to librarian. As Deb said, you know, she told you about the materials, and I'll talk about that in a minute, but you're probably interested in the time frame of when all of this stuff is due. You should review Procedure 13 if you haven't already. It's on the web. Hope everybody knows how to get to it. If they don't, let me know. Read Procedure 13, the part that applies to you. And the time frame works like this. Very shortly, APPC will be recommending members of the review boards to be selected. So, and then I'll work with Sarah and we'll get the review boards in place. But before that happens, actually, around the 1st of June, the first week of June, Michelle Hedges, who works with me in 201, will be sending out letters to everyone who is eligible to be considered for promotion to associate librarian and for the first time for librarian. Those of you who are at the associate level know that, at least I hope you do, that you can stay at associate as long as you want to. You can keep getting renewed at that level. The going up for promotion to librarian is optional. So we let you know when you're first eligible to be considered for librarian. Many people opt not to do that the first year. They say, I'm not ready for it, I want to wait till I've completed something, or I'm just not ready. So then the onus falls on the individual to let me know when they are ready. I don't come back and ask those people every year, so are you ready this year? Can you hear me now? So we let you know once when you're eligible, and then after that it's up to you to let me know. Does that make sense? But for most of you, I think, I see a lot of faces in the room of people who will be considered for promotion to associate this next round. And that is not optional. It is considered an up or out system. You cannot stay at the assistant librarian level or the senior assistant librarian level more than a certain number of years. And there are exceptions that can be made, but you cannot just stay at that level for a long time. So if someone is eligible to be considered and they have an extenuating circumstance, maybe they were out with an illness or had a child or had some major change in their career and they need more time, those should be discussed with me, and then we could postpone the review. But barring all of that, you will get a letter in early June that outlines what you're supposed to submit and gives you the dates for things. The first time marker is by August 1st, we need your letters, we need the names of your references, a list of your references along with contact information and why you are mentioning them. So you wouldn't just give us a list of people, you'd say, professor whatever, I taught a course with him, or, you know, another reference librarian, I served on a committee with this person, or some context for the committee. So you get the list of references to us by August 1st. We immediately send out the requests for the references. In other words, you don't contact your references directly and say, please write a letter for me. What you should do is contact those references and say, I'd like you to write, would you be willing to write a letter for me? Would you be able to write a strong letter for me, not just any letter? And usually you give the person that you're asking to be your reference a copy of your resume, maybe a copy of your cover letter if it tells a little bit more about you. So you give the person enough information so that they're comfortable writing the letter for you. But our office is the one who formally requests the letter be written. We send the person a copy of the relevant piece of Procedure 13. We explain what our criteria are. Any questions about that part? So we would like your list of names by August 1st, and then the rest of your materials by August 15th. So in August, I generally get a lot of phone calls. And do you really need it by August 15th? Now, of course, if August 15th is a Saturday, following Monday's night. And the world will not stop if somebody misses it by a day or two. The object is to have all of the materials ready for the review boards in September. Because as Deb and Tony said, they have a pretty short window. They have 2.5 months to really get this done. And this year, for promotion to associate, it looks like we might have 11 people. So we had kind of a lull. One year we had almost nobody, and then this year there's a big group. So when Deb said that keep it short, that's one thing, but also maybe your Tony said that they typically assign one of the candidates to each review board member. Well, there are only five or seven, so it's going to be a little bit more, it's going to be a little harder of a job this year, and we may have trouble getting people to serve on the review boards. I don't know. No, I don't. We never have trouble.
Use the stairs.
Use the stairs method. No, we won't do that. So that makes it doubly important that everybody gets their materials in on time. And then we want to get the letters out to the references so that they can get them back. We ask for everything back from the references and from the supervisors. And I was going to answer you, Nancy. I didn't quite finish gotten to it. By the 1st of September. So we ask the supervisors, department heads, and up the chain of command to the AUL level for their letters about each of you by September 1st. So by the beginning of September, you know, we always have a few stragglers on reference letters. Not, you know, everybody is as responsive as we would like. So we then have to go back and ask them again. But by early September, we have all of the packets ready. Any questions about what I've said so far? We do include in the material we give to the review boards a copy of an up-to-date job description. So that's something that the supervisors maybe I'm saying what you're going to say, the supervisors need to make sure that the job description is current and accurate. And we include the performance reviews that have been submitted over the previous several years. So if you are not, if there's anyone here who is not getting regular performance reviews from their supervisors, please make sure that that happens. I mean, I view this whole process as a joint responsibility of the individual. You know, you are all professionals, and it's your future and your career, and also the supervisor's responsibility. So it's not letting anybody off the hook, but if you're not getting what you need from your supervisor, you need to say, I need your help in making sure that I'm going to get promoted. So, references, 7, 8, something like that. By the time you have a few people you've worked with in the system, maybe a few people you've worked with at Cornell, faculty or other departments, and then hopefully 1 or 2 or 3 references from outside, it's hard to have fewer than 7, I would say, but that's a good number to aim for. Your cover letter, again, is not just a one-page letter. Generally, they run 3 to 5 pages, wouldn't you say, because they kind of highlight what is important. Explain why what you've done is significant. That's the way I like to think of it. You're marketing yourself, you're explaining what your contribution has been and why you think it's important. One time we had someone put down, you know, I brought this database to Cornell, and no explanation of what that meant, how hard it was, how much effort it took, what the import of this was, because remember, the people on the review board are from all over the library. They don't necessarily work in the area that you work in. They may not know this database because it's so outside of their regular work. So you do need to do a bit of a selling job to explain why what you've done is important. And as Deb said, we're not all comfortable with that, but that is something you need to do in this instance. Your resume, up to date, and then copies of anything you've written, any web pages you've designed. It's nice to give them printouts of things if possible, because the committee is generally meeting in a conference room that does not have a computer. So they're not able to go and just call up websites and look at things online. You need to give them print versions. Maybe someday we'll get beyond that, but we're not yet. The other thing that I recommend is that you, and I'm offering this, you don't have to do it, but I like to meet with everybody who is up for promotion, and I'm happy to review your cover letter, your resume. Sometimes I'm able to make helpful suggestions about the organization of materials, or do I have enough? What do you think of these names of references? Is it sufficient? Does it seem like it covers what the committee will want? I'm not a member of the committee. My advice doesn't carry any weight with them, but I have met with a lot of people over the years, so take advantage of it if you want to, and I'm more than happy to meet with any of you who want to. I think that's it.
I just want to endorse that last remark by Susan. I think it's really important for you to meet with Susan. She does give good advice, and I know people over the years have found her extremely helpful, so take advantage of her.
I actually have a question on behalf of everybody. Do you have examples of people who've previously gone through the process in your office that people come and look at?
The folders,
or do you need to contact people individually to get
them? We give those materials back to the candidates. To people, because it's their only record, really, a lot of times, of what they've done. But we have had people volunteer over the years and say, I'd be more than happy to share things. So I don't think it's hard to find people who are willing. If somebody is having trouble, they could ask me, and I could suggest people that they could ask. But no one has ever said, well, I don't really want this material back, you can keep it, you know, so it does go back to the individual.
Could you explain for us how you pick the review boards so that the folks have a better sense of who might be on them?
Thank you. We try to have a wide range of people from all the major functional areas, from public services, technical services, collection development, special collections. We have to avoid anybody who's in the supervisory chain of command of the people who are up for promotion. So that may be a bit of a challenge this year. Yeah. We have 11 people up. That's, you know, two or three people, you know, that can't be included. Nobody who's on the review board, who's on the APPC, can be on the review boards. I can't be on it. So there are a lot of people who cannot serve. We look at the candidates who are coming up and try to see if we have people who are generally familiar with what they do. Did that answer it well enough? Jim?
You just mentioned people who can't serve on the review board,
right,
if they're in a supervisory capacity. Earlier, someone mentioned that there may be cases where a member had to recuse themselves.
Okay.
Now, what would that?
Let me just explain. It may be that we don't have enough people to choose among, because there are other things. You can't have been on the review board in the previous 2 years. You know, there are certain things like that. So occasionally we do have someone on the board who is either in the chain of command or is related to that person. I mean, we have a number of people here who have relationships, or, you know, in other ways, or have or work so closely with that person as a colleague that they don't feel comfortable in that role. So their procedure 13 actually lays out, I didn't bring a copy with me, I see Bob does, it did, but it lays out some of the reasons why someone could ask to be excused. And then there are other reasons, like they get sick or something happens, you know, like that. But procedure 13 leaves it pretty open what the role of these alternates are. So there are 5 members of the review boards and 2 alternates who are called on if someone can't serve. But some review boards have actually chosen, and I think wisely, to include the alternates in all of their deliberations. First of all, it's a learning experience for the alternates in case they're asked in the future to serve. Plus, if they have to step in the middle of the process, it's really good that they know what's gone on before. And in the case where there are 11 people to be reviewed, it would be awfully nice to have a larger group, you know, to be able. And I don't think Procedure 13 expressly forbids that. It's kind of a little bit vague about that.
And so, I was on as an alternate, and I was not included. And that's why I think we strongly believe that the alternative should be included, because
right,
it made a big difference.
Right. I was an alternate, and I was very much included. I was involved in the whole process.
Right.
It reviewed and I was also asked for my opinion, mm-hmm, although I didn't write the letter.
Right.
I was very much involved.
Does that answer your question? So if somebody felt, you know, I worked with this person, I had a really bad experience with this person, you know, last year or whatever, I just don't feel like I could be objective.
Okay.
Maybe they would choose that. It's very unusual for someone to ask to recuse themselves for a reason like that I'm too close or I'm, you know, whatever. But it happens. Eric, did you have a question?
It was more of a statement. Because I know when I met with you, we talked about people who actually go for references.
Uh-huh.
And in certain situations, I know I can't go back to, you know, when I was a crossing guard in junior high school.
No, generally the committee.
But I can go back when I was working in another institution,
mm-hmm,
if it was a person in a
mm-hmm
decision-making position, like my supervisor,
mm-hmm,
who, you know, higher up within the libraries.
Right.
And that's okay, well, if I'm talking library school, to go to the chair or the dean of the library school and have that person on the way.
Right.
So that would be valid because of how far that cannot be. It has to be related to what maybe was in my cover letter, what I'm trying to highlight as far as my.
Yeah, there's no strict rules about that. It really is. The review board, in my opinion, is looking at your career at Cornell. What have you accomplished since you've been here? And what has gotten you to where you are? So if there is something significant that happened before you got here, I'm sure they'd like a letter on it. But they don't necessarily want letters that just go back and back and back and say, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, you did this. It's really the most recent 3 to 5 years, generally, that they're looking at more closely.
closely.
Primarily since your last promotion is what they're focusing on.
Generally.
Although there are significant things prior to that, then you can include that, but it's generally what you've done since your last promotion.
And in some situations, like I came and I had 3 years here before I went up for associate, so it was, it made sense for me to ask from my last place of employment for people because it was so close.
Filled out the picture a little bit more.
In instances where we asked for additional references, it was often because too many references were from people who were only looking at one, or only had one relationship with you. People who worked with you very closely in your work area. And we really wanted people who had a different perspective from a different department, somebody on a committee. So if you look at the references, look at kind of a spectrum of people.
I know I was asked for a reference from a former employee, and it was 8 years prior to my coming, I mean, to going up for review. So that can happen. That was a long time ago, faraway land.
So. Yeah, I'll say a few things about, specifically about promotion to librarian. But before I do that, let's talk about some of the process. One thing that I don't think was clear was the actual outcome of the review board is a letter of recommendation to the university librarian. And I'm not sure that it's even spelled out how bound she is by that letter. But it is a
recommendation. It's a recommendation.
So that's one little thing to keep in mind. The other thing I thought I'd say, too, before I see a number of senior people here, I would highly recommend, if you have an opportunity or if you're asked to serve on one of these boards, this is it's an extraordinary opportunity to interact with your peers at a completely different level and to sort of take that institutional responsibility of evaluating somebody else's career and their place in the institution, and so a chance to reaffirm your goals and the institution's goals in a very direct way. So if you are asked, serve. and I think you'll find it a very good experience. It always comes at the worst time. So much to do,
right. And
it's in the fall. But just put that aside and bite the bullet. I think it's a very positive experience for everyone, no matter how difficult the discussion may be or painful some other results could be. It's still a positive experience. So, with that as a lead-in. The librarian, the going up for librarian is a completely different process than going up for associate because it's not an up or out promotion. And in fact, you can be turned down for promotion librarian and can resubmit in 2 years. There is a slight gap there. And in fact, you can do that as many as 3 times total. So it isn't the same kind of pressure. On the other hand, I don't think it's something that you would really want to take lightly. Like some sort of roulette, you know. I got 3 chances. I'll just spin them all. I would, you know, don't do it until you feel your career is taking the shape that you really want to evaluate it for this level. Because the criteria given in Procedure 13 are generous and flexible, But Sarah and I think most of the people coming into the process want to see some kind of substantive contribution to the profession, the point that you're being considered for librarian. And Sarah is quite explicit about that. If I can, she can tell people that's good. Having done an outstanding job is the base level for what's being considered. So I did my job and I've done it well, is not sufficient, and Sarah just says that first thing. What the procedure calls for is leadership in department or university work, leadership in scholarly other professional organizations, and improvement in library services through participation in and leadership of professional groups. So leadership gets repeated in every one of those any one of those criteria. So we need the board that's reviewing your career at that point that wants to see evidence of that leadership. And so all the process that you went through with going up for associate, where people are still looking very much at potential, your potential in the profession.
And your job performance.
And your job performance at that point is clearly important. Doing an outstanding job, while it might not be completely enough, it's a huge component of the criteria that are for our associate. But it's a given for the librarian position, and after that you really have to show these signs of leadership. And so the letters that come in are not letters, the references that the board, that the review panel looks at, are not the person does their job well, but this person has chaired this committee, this national committee, and led it to this or whatever. So that's one thing to remember about librarianship. On the other hand, there are three criteria numbered here, but it's not a checklist where you have to provide the leadership in all those fields or met every criteria. We really, I think, boards, panels, like Susan said, we'd look at the whole shape of it and see just what kind of contribution you've made. And that contribution could certainly have different emphases for different people. And I think all boards take that into account. And I think one thing that I should mention too, because this has come up in every board that the past two boards that I've served on, is it's not just, although the major part of what people look at is your contribution to, let's say, in widening circles, the library, the library profession, some national contributions, but contributions in other ways to the scholarly enterprise, the academic enterprise, or even the human enterprise of being in a community are certainly things that are considered. So we would certainly like, I think any board would like to see engagement and leadership in many different realms of life, not just librarianship. But probably you wouldn't be punished for not having written a novel or something like that. but if you had, that would be something we consider. Yeah.
Does that last comment about working in the community and being involved in other apply at the associate level as well?
To some extent,
but really not as much as I think it does for the step up to librarian. Would you say that was right, Susan?
It would depend on the contribution,
too.
Yeah. I understand.
It's not the primary thing. Will it help you? Yes. Will it make you, will it move you over when you weren't going to be? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I raise it only so that those of you who have made those contributions can feel that you added to your career also.
It helps present the whole picture of your self.
Right. Let's see, thinking too from things that other people said, number of recommendations. If there could be 11 people up for associate, I'd keep it pretty short. Definitely don't try to overwhelm people with like 15 recommendations or something like that, because what you're going to whelm them with is, how inappropriate that is. I think I would try to make them count.
Yes.
And for librarians, like I said, the thing is don't get extraneous ones that are tangential to your career. If the person can't say how you've contributed, provided leadership in a certain area, it's not an appropriate person to ask. And your letter just becomes fluff. It's more of an annoyance than a help.
And you don't want to annoy us.
Yeah, don't annoy us.
One thing people often do, if you've you're involved in instruction, and you've taught in a number of classes. You often get thank you letters from the faculty members that you've worked with. One or two that say what a great job you did are fine. 10 that say pretty much the same thing is really, I think that's the kind of thing you're mentioning.
Right.
An example, not every one that you can possibly find.
Right. And I also wanted to say, thinking about how the process within the committee, there are lots of different approaches, but the two boards that I've worked on have worked on, in our cases, we had the luxury of assigning two people to each candidate, so that was wonderful. And they got very thorough reviews, but of course that isn't always possible, and assigning three candidates to one panel member might be the reality of the associate level one. But it doesn't have to be that way. There are lots of different ways to set it up, I think, within the board, that there are just a lot of different approaches. And I'd also just have one little thing about it. It doesn't absolve many of the members of the board not understanding it, having read the material for everyone and understanding, you know, sort of the basic, you know, they've met the basic criteria and understand where they are. The team or the person who is there, who is looked at in more detail, can present the case more thoroughly and bring out elements that he might have missed, but still everyone's responsible for looking at it, so you do get that broad base. Any questions about librarianship? It's the move up to librarian. I hope I didn't want to discourage you by making it sound too high a bar, because the bar wasn't that high. There is a bar, though. I guess that's the process.
I know that procedure 13 isn't just specific. I'm tired. Isn't that specific?
Does not project. No, Leah, you know, people tell me all the time.
Ops, we got more.
That's a joke.
So what about, you know, you say you've been contributing and you have leadership. How is that expressed? In addition to, you know, things accomplished by committees that you were chairing and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. presentations, papers, publications.
Sure.
I know there's a lot of flexibility at that at the associate level.
Yeah.
What about the
Same. Absolutely the same. But again, I don't. The procedure is written, I think, very carefully to not make people think that they have to, it's publish or perish. This isn't it's a semi-academic position, but it isn't that kind of position. It isn't a faculty position. Publication, though, is a very, very strong evidence of leadership, of having taken some problem and thought about it and then presented it to the community at large. That's another way of talking about leadership. So it's important.
Organizing conferences or meetings, or chairing or serving on a group that writes a big report. Whether you know you actually authored it or not, you'd have to make it clear what your role was. But there, you can be on a task force that investigates something. I mean, there are a lot of ways. There's no one way. We do have people who are very interested in an academic area that it's their own research area, and they continue to do that research as they progress. That counts. So if someone is a scholar or a, you know, has a subject expertise that they're interested in and they continue to work in that, that's evidence of a scholarly activity that would count.
I'm sitting here with a sinking feeling and say I either have made the wrong choice to leave Scott. I should have stayed on the committee, served on committees. Right now, I feel it could be a weird situation I'm in. I don't serve on any ALA committees nor any other library. I'm not going to SLA, ALA, and I don't chair, let alone chairing any, because for my job, the committee is not the place to be where I make the best impact. I go to CRL, talk to the VP. I go to NYSHE, talk to the executive director, because the influence for Cornell for my job is to, instead of going to committee to spread Cornell's name, I have to influence them. And then I'm sitting here and thinking, I have nothing to list for the promotion. And also, the type of work I do, I don't necessarily lead scholarly publishing. For example, when I go to China, talk about how a high density storage facility function. They have none in that country. All of a sudden, they remember Cornell is the place to go.
That sounds like evidence to me. Keep those thoughts.
When people pull out my presentation, it's all in Chinese, but it's all pictures about X function. And then I have nothing that I lead, but I travel perhaps more than...
But actually, if I can interrupt, that's all very good evidence of leadership.
All of a sudden thinking, you know, maybe I better change a job so that I can...
No, but thank you for bringing that up, because that was my other point. But I would say, just in terms of advice, Susan made that offer. It's never too early to go and talk to her with concerns like that and say, how can I present my career as it is and make a valid case for promotion, and she'll help you do that, and I think that's important.
Another thing, Bob, if I could just interrupt, when you're going for promotion to librarian, it is key that you have the support of your department head and the people above you. If they're lukewarm about your being ready for this promotion, you will not be promoted, because it's an endorsement by the senior management and that you are ready to be at that level. So, and because there's no, other than hurting your pride, there's no negative consequence in terms of keeping your job, I think people are pretty clear that if you're not quite ready, you know, if you haven't quite done enough, we're going to suggest that you go back and do some more in this area and come back again. So it's really important, wouldn't you say, Bob, mm-hmm. that the supervisor, department head, AUL, feel confident, are really supporting behind you. So another place to go for advice about whether you're ready to come up for this is the people that you report to, work with, and say, what do you think? And the other thing is, don't just stick within your silo or your your department, your unit. Go out and talk to other senior people in the library, because, strange as it may seem, people do get certain points of view in one organization, and that doesn't necessarily mean that the opinions that are held in one unit are shared by everybody in the library. I mean, I'm trying to say this in a positive way, but you can sometimes get advice from your supervisor or department head that makes sense to them, but it isn't what everybody else or what many other people think. So talking to other people, Sheen, in the organization and saying, what do you think? What do you think of my contribution? You know, if you're interested in having that kind of feedback, because it will give you a sense of whether other people think you're ready for that level.
One thing I wanted to say, Sheen and Leah, this is, and probably everybody is worried about this, but some people have specific jobs that actually, in many ways, preclude them from contributing in some of the ways that are suggested in Procedure 13, and it's the review board's responsibility to understand that. And in fact, we actually, when we wrote, I think I can say this, when we wrote to Sarah this time, we mentioned that it was people who not only can do their jobs but are required to provide leadership in certain areas may not be able to publish. That just isn't part of what happens in that particular field, and it isn't something that one could reasonably use as a criteria. And so there are lots of elements like that where, like in Sheen's case, the job is quite specific, and leadership is manifested in a completely different way than it would be manifested for somebody in a different part of the library system. So boards are
flexible.
We're flexible. We can, I think I think you'll see, when you serve on one of these, it's almost immediately apparent who's providing leadership and who isn't. It's not some, it, there's nobody there with a calculator seeing whether, you know, holding up a little thing, 9.9, 8.6. It isn't like that at all. It's fairly, yeah, we could do that. Probably relieve some of the tension. So, once again, I think the boards are looking at the that big shape, but they are looking for substantive contributions of leadership in some form.
There's kind of a tension on the board between trying to be sensitive and deal with individual contributions and how different each person is, but also trying to have criteria, because sometimes we on this panel, or I, am challenged. What really are the criteria? Are there really any criteria? You know, or is it just an opinion, you know, kind of a, it's not popularity, but is it just a, you know, they just take a look at you and say, ah, we think so, you know, or we don't. And there are no, you know, objective criteria per se, other than what is in Procedure 13. They have to use their judgment and apply what is there to your situation. So, Sheen, in your case, providing the leadership to get this whole catalyst thing going, I mean, who could ever expect anybody to do any more than that? You know, I mean, that's leadership.
You heard that?
Yeah, but did you also hear her say that her opinion doesn't carry any weight with her?
Yeah.
Susan,
Okay.
You don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but can you give us a brief history of Procedure 13 or being the bowl of
criteria? There is no such thing as a brief history of Procedure 13.
Never mind.
Well, Procedure 13, I mean, it was written in 1973?
Two, three.
Something like that. It's been revised a number of times. And I forget, honestly, when the last revision was done.
This printout I have is dated April 99. I don't know if that's the latest or not.
And the criteria were changed at that time.
Actually, I think I was on APPC.
I was too.
Yeah.
When we did for librarians.
So
June 1995 is what I found.
95? Thank you, Iris.
No, I think it was after that.
Not sure about that. But let's see. Does anybody remember exactly
why? Oh, yes.
Why
here it says the positions were established in 1975. And didn't it come out of the Academic Assembly was our vehicle to be like
for
a faculty senate.
Recognition, right. Well, before that, people were appointed librarian. There was no promotion process. There was no, it wasn't clear whether there were different ranks or anything. So this set sort of a whole structure in place and spells out how people are appointed, promoted, terminated, otherwise disposed of. and it's been changed over the years to reflect, I think, an emphasis on external activity. I would say certainly at the associate and I think it was the librarian level that had the most changes the last time we did it, because we wanted it to be clear that just doing your job well at Cornell and not being involved in the profession beyond Cornell was fine to keep your job at the associate level, you know, assuming you do some things beyond your job, but it was not sufficient for the librarian level. So that's, we tried to make that a little bit clearer. I mean, it was a reflection of Sarah's expectations and of sort of the changing, don't forget, as over time, work that maybe 20 years ago was done by a librarian is no longer considered academic professional work. You know, we've reduced the number of academic staff, and we expect more from those staff. Mm-hmm. So you don't have a circulation librarian checking out books. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, you used to, we did have circulation librarians 20, 30 years ago.
I was one.
And many of the catalog technical services things that were academic positions are no longer considered academic positions. So things have changed.
Are you able to talk about salary at all? Because I'm always wondering, what is the salary structure with regard to these promotions in terms of percentage wise?
You get paid for this?
Usually $20,000.
Yeah, there's the signing bonus.
And if you're a free agent or not.
The promotion itself generally carries a 5% salary increase at the time you're promoted, the following July after the review board, plus the annual raise. So it's an addition to the raise. That's standard. We want to make sure Scott has time to make his contributions.
You said it all. And the role of supervisor, it's really your job as a supervisor to do what I'm going to describe that you would do for an employee who reports to you who's in the librarian track. Sort of at the end of the process, I'll start there since we're talking about putting your packets together, your supervisor should write a very strong letter in your support. If the supervisor isn't able to write that strong letter, then he or she hasn't been doing his or her job through the whole process. Because part of that job is to be sure you're ready for promotion, and that that involves making sure you're the right person for the job. I'm quoting from some notes that were offered here in 2004, so I want to attribute some of my comments to Mary Oakes and Kathy Chang. They say, make sure you hire the right person for the right job, and that's the beginning. You should be right for the work that you're doing. Your activity is a reflection on the supervisor. The supervisor wants you to succeed, because if you succeed, that's a good reflection on them. Your supervisor needs to help you get connected, especially if you're just starting out. Typically, a supervisor has some experience in the field, and they're usually in the same track that you're in. They may have connections at the national level to help you get appointed to committees where you can make a contribution. That's part of their role, and you should ask them to help you if they don't offer that. The evaluations every year, I hope each person is being evaluated every year. That evaluation is part of your permanent record. It's part of the record that the review board looks at. So if you're not being reviewed, go to your supervisor and contact Susan. Be sure you're getting reviewed. That's your opportunity to find out how you're doing, if you're on the right track. It's your opportunity to set goals to achieve the milestones that you need in order to be promoted. So that's the supervisor's responsibility, and you should expect that from them. That's pretty much it. It's the supervisor's job to support you, and that's the role that they play in your promotion.
I'm just going to make a comment. It shouldn't be right at the end, though. I mean, this should be happening the whole time. Just as if you're thinking about going up for librarian, especially, but also your activity shouldn't be the year before you go up. It should be, again, a part of a well-thought-out career plan, and even if your career takes a turn and goes someplace else, which is fine and probably very good, there needs to be, you need to somehow make that connection. But your supervisor should be with you every step of the way.
And if you're having annual performance evaluations, that makes sure you are prepared, you are moving forward if they're doing their job.
And I do ask every supervisor for these every year. And we make it clear that that's expected. So I think it's rare that someone doesn't. It's usually a change in, somebody leaves and then there's a gap and there's a reason for it. But you should be getting, it's a supervisor's responsibility to give you real feedback about how you're doing. It's not just writing something pro forma every year. It really should be, are you making sufficient progress? Are you meeting my expectations? Am I going to be able to recommend you in the future? Good supervisors are working with you over time and like setting a plan in motion, saying, I want to make sure you're going to be ready to be promoted in 3 years or 4 years or whatever it is. Here are the steps. Let's lay out a sort of a course of action What are you going to need to do this year, next year? I mean, that's the ideal. Not everybody does that, but it's reasonable to say, I need this from you. I need your help, to your supervisor. Oh, and the end of the process. So the review boards make their recommendations. They write a short report to the university librarian, and generally the board as a whole meets with the university librarian. That doesn't happen every year, but usually it does, and talks about any problems they encountered in the process. Then our office notifies all the candidates of the decision in December, and then sets up an individual meeting with each person, each candidate, with Sarah Thomas. So she will have read hopefully your whole file, maybe not every single word in it, but at least reviewed your application materials as well as the recommendation of the board before she meets with you. And that we try to have those before the holidays. Doesn't always happen. Sometimes those meetings have to go over into January, but you will know the decision by the end of the calendar year. And the promotion actually takes place the following July.
And if you're not promoted, Susan, and it's
at the associate level. At the associate level. Well, at the associate level, there are a couple of things that can happen. You're promoted, you get a 5-year appointment at the associate rank. If the committee feels that you're almost there, but you're just not quite there, they can recommend I forget what it's called in there, but basically that you improve and come back again. So there is the possibility to do it again under certain circumstances. It's not, if it's clear you're not meeting the expectations, they wouldn't do that. But say you're doing fine, but in one area you're just not, you haven't done enough professional activity, you're showing the beginnings of it, but they need a little more, they might recommend an extension at the senior assistant level and then another review. Or if the decision is to not promote, then you fill out the remainder of your appointment, which goes to the following June. So in any, the worst case is you have 6 months notice before your job ends.
And there is an appeal process.
There's an appeal process, that's correct. But the appeal is not based on I don't agree with them. It's based on they didn't look at something, I wasn't treated fairly in some way. There has to be a substantive reason for it. But I will say, just to be encouraging to all of you, it is extremely rare for people not to get promoted. The promotion process is not meant to be something that you lie awake at night worrying about and agonizing about. Please don't do that. If you're doing a good job and you're reasonably active in getting volunteering for things, you will be promoted. You might not get to the librarian level, but you'll get to the associate level. We've had only a handful of people not be promoted over the last dozen years, and usually you could have seen the writing on the wall in those cases. They don't get along with their supervisor. They've been arguing and fighting over what their job should have been for the last 3 years. The person has just not, another case, someone is just not hearing all the stuff about professional activity. They're just doing their job. They wanted to only do their job. They don't belong in a librarian position. They belong in a staff position where coming to work every day, doing your job, turning out the cataloging or whatever it is the job. That's fine. They're probably a really good employee, but they're not an academic employee because they're not doing the other stuff. So it's not as scary as it sounds.
I'm just curious. You said someone gets a promoted to the associate level for 5 years. The end of those 5 years, should they have to do it again and put out another portfolio?
No. After the first promotion, then it's a renewal process. Then the supervisor is asked, do you recommend the person be reappointed at that level? You don't submit anything. You're just, it's the supervisor's recommendation. No, it's a fun experience that you only have to do once. Any other questions or comments?
I just wanted to remind people of the mentor program,
yes,
because that's a really great place to get another person to give you a perspective and work with you over time. And starting early is really very important. I mean, several people mentioned that. Start early to think about promotion. Start when you first start your job, but also start early in terms of putting your materials together. Don't do it 3 weeks before. Start much earlier than that, so you really can synthesize all this information and put it. Your cover letter is incredibly important, and that's what people, and don't go on and on either. I mean, you want to make a point, but you don't want to belabor the point unnecessarily. So there's a balance between being brief and giving good information. So again, having a mentor who knows you and who is committed to helping you look at your letter as well. I mean, those people will give you honest feedback, not just kind of a few grammatical things, but really give you substantive feedback. And ask somebody that you respect or that you think is a real leader in the community, ask them to help you and take a look at your so we don't have to be a formal mentoring process. It could be something more informal as well. And I think people would be delighted to help and give you their perspective.
And that was a really good point about starting to collect your material early. I always recommend that when you serve on a committee or do anything, just keep a file there. Put everything in the file. You'd be amazed. You think back, now when did I serve on that committee? Was it last year, 2 years ago? Who was the chair? I mean,
turns out to be 20 years ago.
Over time, these things sort of blur together, and you really can't go back and find the report that you wrote 5 years ago unless you've made a copy and put it in your file. So it is a good idea to keep and try to keep your resume up to date.
Yeah.
Then it's not so much of a challenge at the end to do that.
But also when we talk about supplementary material, you don't have to give us every report that you've ever written.
No.
I mean, or every article. If you give us the citations and give us some representative samples, I think that...
Most people don't have that many articles that they're giving you representative. I mean, most people submit all the actual published things, don't they?
Well, we had a case where it was good that they just gave us...
That's not the norm, though.
No, it wasn't. No. It wasn't.
But again, use your annual evaluation as an opportunity to reflect on what you've done that year and package that each year.
Right. And that's a good way, because then you can go back and look, what were my accomplishments last year, the year before, et cetera, and then you can make a whole picture for yourself.
Deb said something earlier about sometimes we feel, that we shouldn't promote ourselves or but this really is a very important process, and you really should think about the significance of your contributions and comment on that. Say why this is important. Say why you think that what you did or this, why this article that you wrote or this committee that you served on, why this really made a difference. So I don't think that you should feel that's tooting your own horn or whatever. It is really, really important, because we don't want to try to read in between the lines. We really want it to be stated very, very much up front. This was an important contribution, and this was the significance of this contribution. State it just that openly. I think it's really important. We're not going to think you're bragging at all. We're going to be very thankful to you, because it makes it so much easier to then synthesize that information.
You should almost assume people don't know who you are.
Right.
Or why what you did is important.
The other thing I think is important is familiarize yourself with Procedure 13 and some of the requirements there. And again, don't make the review board read between the lines. Be really clear. If this was a contribution to the university, this is a contribution to the profession, here are my leadership things. Use the language that's in here that they're using as the criteria, so it makes it easier for them to
and here's my reference who can comment on it.
Yes.
So you really put it all together. It's a great process. It's very logical and very systematic.
If you list 7 or 8 people's names as reference, will you contact everyone?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It's the we send out the letters requesting those references from everyone. In fact, we've had misunderstanding about that occasionally, where sometimes people have given us 12 or 15 thinking that we were going to select. But no, because we start the process of requesting the letters of reference before the review boards even meet. So I certainly wouldn't want to choose among them. So we ask everybody that you give us for a letter.
And when you contact those references, it's really important that you suggest to them why you're asking them to be a reference for you. So you can say, I'm asking you to be a reference for me to specifically comment on my contribution on this committee in this way, and this is why it's important. I mean, you can kind of guide them in terms of the information that they can include in the letter. And I think it's really important from my perspective to do that for each of the references. And then for them to know that they will be getting a request from Susan's office, but they already know what kind of information they expect you to include. And make sure that they're comfortable doing that. I mean, if you might want to have a personal conversation with them, make sure they want to give you.
Before you
give
put
you
them on the list.
Yeah. And I mean, then your request, Susan,
it's perfectly appropriate
right?
to ask them.
Yeah, Susan's request, actually. You sent Procedure 13, or at least
yes.
the criteria with
yes.
them. And usually, I think you ask specifically, comment on this person's leadership role.
And we give others language, you know, ability to be flexible and adaptable and use good judgment and things like that. So we ask kind of general things, but that's a really good point, because if you just get a letter back that says, person, you know, X is...
Very pleasant.
Very, very pleasant. I've enjoyed working with this person.
Pleasure to work.
Great reference librarian. It really doesn't help the committee very much. The committee is looking for the letters to address the criteria in Procedure 13. That's we try to ask them to do that, but you know, not everybody writes their letter. My daughter is in graduate school, and I was amazed when she was applying to graduate school and she was asking for letters of reference. Many of her references asked her to write the letters for them. And I don't know if other people have that experience. They say, sure, I'll be happy to write you a letter. You give me the letter and I'll sign it. Mm-hmm. So she had to actually write the letter, which was hard to do. But that's along the lines of what Erla's saying, that the more you can help feed them what they need to know to be able to write the letter, give them some ideas, give them some language.
Of course, there's a reason you're choosing them, and that you want them to comment on something very specific, so tell them that.
Yeah, I mean, I've been asked to write letters of reference, too, and it's always helpful to get a copy of the letter that you've written, a copy of your resume, and then some specific direction about what it is that you want, you know, they want you to address in the letter, so it's all very helpful. And, you know, these people are very busy, so the easier you make it for them, short of writing it for them, I think is appreciated.
Has this been useful to you, this panel? We try to do this every year. And sometimes I feel like, because we've done it over and over again, that maybe everybody's heard all this before, but I think we want it to be your opportunity to, you know, ask questions, to find out what you need to know. So if there are things that you'd like to hear more about during this panel, we'll do it again next year, send me an email or probably I'm the best one to get it, because my distinguished panelists, co-panelists may or may not be on the panel next year. But I certainly will be. But if there are things you think that would be helpful to you for us to do it a little bit differently, or to have a different format, or to include more about X, Y, or Z, please let me know that. Thank you very much for coming. Hey.